New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm interviewing Caitlin Byrne, one of the true pioneers of immersive media, transmedia, and virtual reality. We're going to be talking a whole lot about where these paradigm-shifting trends came from and where they'll be taking us. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to diving in with you.
Fantastic. Let's start by you giving me and the audience the executive summary of your story, just in case they're not familiar.
Ooh, okay, the executive summary of my backstory.
Yes.
So I grew up in the American Southwest, and I moved to New York because I wanted to do theater, you know, with a big capital T. And when I got out here and I went to school, that turned into immersive parties, masquerade raves, non-traditional space use events, and also an opportunity presented itself to work with this small firm called Starlight Runner Entertainment, helping them do this crazy thing called transmedia production. So the idea is telling a story over three or more platforms. So I joined this crew while I was still in college, actually, but I found the opportunity to work incredibly hard building out the story worlds for big intellectual property franchises at a time where the technology that you could tell stories on was just exploding in complexity. People could use digital tools online as well as it's starting to happen on mobile phones. Social media could be used to tell stories. And so I had the tremendous fun of working on Pirates of the Caribbean and Halo, Avatar, Disney Fairies, just a huge number of these really big intellectual property story worlds that millions of people got to engage with. And so my job was to help production teams understand the world that they were building in, coordinate telling those stories together, and then to help execute. So I have written games. I've written theatrical experiences for cruise lines. I've created original story work, like my independent feature, Jurassic Park Slope, that its name was changed to McCarran Park, which was a bar crawl of Williamsburg, where you unlocked a feature film by going to different locations. So you would walk with two within a number of feet from a certain spot and unlock each scene. The full-length feature is now out on Vimeo, but that was 2012. So after about 10 years with Starlight, I went out on my own, and I've since worked with the U.S. Fund for UNICEF and the UNICEF Kid Power Program, connecting wearable pedometers to giving and education and content for kids to learn about how aid works and how they can be a part of the fight against global malnutrition. And I also founded a company called DataVise last year, which is an immersive design and technology laboratory exploring VR, AR, and web VR technologies, not just for entertainment, but for data visualization.
Fantastic. I mean, one of the things that struck me as I was looking at your bio and your background was the concept of a transmedia producer was really highly predictive. And years before smartphones, displayed video, and YouTube blew up, you guys were advocating for consistent storytelling across platforms, fine-tuned for the unique specificities of those platforms, and which is sort of axiomatic now. It seems obvious now, but at the time, it really wasn't. And given that that you were right there, knowing and seeing where it was going, your thoughts about where media and entertainment are headed should be listened to because, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting is that for the last couple of years in Silicon Valley and Hollywood punditry, I think VR has sort of worn the crown of the one thing that the word disruption has been attached to. And it excites people in a way that really sort of blows doors off of everything else, VR and also AR too. I mean, that's sort of getting in there. And I'm curious, you know, obviously people talk about that it's going to disrupt education, entertainment, video games. But so you're adding data visualization. So that's like bar charts, pie charts.
Well, yes.
Sorry, not to be ridiculous, but
I'll take a second. And you know, I feel like the path from working with all of these different platforms has put me in a position that I feel very, very fortunate to have had a chance to have worked with so many different kinds of team and so many different kinds of production environment. Because when we're talking about virtual reality, we're talking about a truly convergent medium where we're bringing in cinematic and theatrical ideas, as well as game design and digital interactive concepts, and squishing them all into, right now, 3 to 10 minute experiences. And even though the hardware or the distribution for those are as wildly different as every other type of media, the complexity of building those is bringing together features from all of those different paths. So when you're building a team around VR, you get to build a really diverse one where you're working with technology as well as human behavior, where you're working with magicians and novelists. Like, you want that diversity on your team, because VR is a medium where you're immersed and present, but the human head, the mind, is actually the camera. So you're playing with something kind of new. Now, when you're thinking about that, you can do things you couldn't do before, but you don't want to lose any of what's come before either. You know, you don't want to, you don't want to add up to 360 degrees and lose all of the accessibility or availability of the internet.
I look a lot at sort of how media is consumed and behaviors around that. And one of the things that's been a little interesting, well, that's been interesting about millennial behavior with media consumption is the fact that they are multiple devicing, you know, that they're they're on the TV, they're also on their tablet, their phone, and their laptop simultaneously, that they're really, they've got all these devices going. And when you're in the VR experience, it really occludes all else. And will they be willing to do that?
There will always be a place for that sort of complete immersion. But right now, it's so early, and we're dealing with such a small sample set of the audience that none of us quite know what that audience segment is actually going to look like. And as we bring in new technologies and we're taking out layers of some of that isolation, we're going to see new content develop. We're going to see new interactions and new behaviors develop that will be experiences that maybe more people like, maybe fewer. Maybe they're really good for therapy. You know, VR is a piece of media that's been approved by the FDA in practice as part of PTSD therapies.
Sure.
Oxford put out a great paper a few months back about using VR simulations to help people with profound social anxiety. So going to the supermarket or going on the subway becomes easier through repetition, things like that. But even now, when people talk about VR, they tend to be thinking about 360-degree videos or games, and you're wearing the big, heavy head-mounted displays, and you're kind of stuck on a cable. One of the fun things that we get to play with at Datavised is what's called Web VR, which is web browser distributed virtual reality. Outside of the Oculus and the Vives of the world, we think about mobile VR. And when we're looking at cinematic virtual reality, we're downloading these still very large apps to watch these videos on our phones. But if you're building for browser-based virtual reality, web VR, you're building in the web browser. So it's a hyperlink. You're going to a web page to engage with this experience. And as a segue back to the question about data visualization that I've totally lost track of, a few months ago, Datavised worked with EY, the accounting and consultancy company, to put together a WebVR experience as part of their Innovation Realized 2016 conference and report. Now, if you've ever read an accounting and consulting firm's annual report, you may feel like it might be a little dry. Now, I love the work that EY does. They actually make it very interesting. And I say that as someone who does occasionally read theses for fun, but we can add so much with the tools we have for entertainment, the ways that we engage people for sometimes frivolous types of education, you know, and everything you're looking at, everything you read is teaching you something. It's why humans are so good at amassing resources and coordinating. Story is how we've become the dominant species on the planet. When we're talking about all of these new tools to communicate information for, between ourselves, a lot of the emphasis on design and experience is going to stuff that's not teaching the complex stuff. That's not teaching the stuff where it doesn't seem as immediately fun because it's complex, because it's the data is too large. The set is unimaginable. But now that we have the capability to collect this huge information, all of this data, and we have these really fascinating interactive tools we can use to display it, we can create human environments in these immersive displays that allow us to connect with complex data in a totally new way. Some of the most emotionally resonant ways to look at information about a city is to walk down the street. When we can create an environment where you're walking down a city street and you have overlays of median annual income, you start to understand the neighborhoods you're walking through in different ways. And I'm actually pulling examples from a piece that Datavise CTO Brian Churls did for PBS POV and the Knight Foundation called WebVR Cities that is a few years old now. Unlike WebVR today that we can do in a way that's totally mobile accessible, this was just for Oculus and desktop. If you go and check out on Datavise website, you can find the WebVR piece that we did for EY. If you click on the link to it, you can open it on a mobile device, a desktop, or if you have a head-mounted display connected to your computer, it will give you the option to look at it in a head-mounted display, all by pressing that URL.
Right.
If you want to go into full three-dimensional immersion, you can. But, you know, I use the example of, I think about my father who's pushing 80, who has a smartphone but isn't necessarily interested in a full stereoscopic experience.
Right.
He can still bring that up on his phone and experience it in 2D and get a really powerful, engaging experience from it that will take him through the insights and disruption that they've put together for this year. For me, coming from these big commercial environments where we're talking about millions of audience members, the accessibility is critical. The ability to engage with an audience where they live is incredibly important to get them to understand what they're looking at, to get them to engage at all.
Right. Fascinating. Really, really fascinating. I want to pull back just a minute and go back to sort of the transmedia thinking. And I'm wondering about how, if we're looking at networks, entertainment networks, more traditional players in the media space, and how they are currently promoting their content or marketing their content. If the issue of our time is not one of good content, it's one of discovering content and telling people about it. Is it possible for networks to create the story for their entire network, or can it only be done at the specific content level?
I'm going to address the idea that it's not just about good content anymore. I think what you can't do anymore is have a lot of mediocre content and expect it to survive.
Right.
Right now, we're not just, when we're talking about like TV networks or a TV show, you're no longer just in competition with whoever else is in the time slot. You're in competition with literally everything else imaginable. So you not only have to be good, but you have to be good and accessible and discoverable.
The thing that I'm interested in your opinion about is where the story hues. Is it purely within the content of, let's say, The Good Wife, and we're going to blow this promotion out across, and it really has to do all these different platforms, and it's consistent, and your story is consistent. And then the network has a separate story, and how does the network brand, the larger network story, how is that blown out without competing or disrupting The Good Wife story? Do they exist in parallel? Are they nested? One of the things networks struggle with is creating, especially in this current environment, where we're not locked to primetime, daytime, where content lives in many different locations, it's telling people their own story as well as this content story.
Picking my analogy. okay. We have all seen an event on social media or a blog post about a brand or a company that tried to engage with a social media platform and came out as a dad on a dance floor. Just the, like, a misread, a tone mismatch that's hilarious or tragic or both. You know, just feeling like they were coming in and trying to be a part of a conversation without knowing the language they were speaking.
Right.
For each of these different platforms, as well as sort of their combinations, you're kind of speaking a different language. Or at least you're playing a different game with how you communicate. And some of those languages or experiences or exchanges, people know better than others. So when you're looking at different companies, they're the aggregate of the people and the conversations they're having. So one conversation is made through the big ticket choices of your slated releases. So your primetime lineup, the quality of the advertising that's placed on it, the people that host your late night shows, your daytime shows, all of those are part of the story that you're telling people about yourself and about them. And each one of those smaller platforms where you actually directly engage with one another is another opportunity for conversation. But think about your family. If you've got kids, think about your kids. If you don't have kids, think about when you were a kid. The way your parents spoke to you when they were telling you a story across the dining room table was one sort of communication. The way that you guys communicated when you were playing Monopoly with one another is another. And you're still yourself, but you're an actor. You're an active participant in the story you're telling in both cases, in the communication that you're having. And each one of those moments and each one of those types of communications tells a very different story, but in aggregate, they're the story you're telling about yourself. They're sort of, you can make choices in a big sense about how you're telling these big long-term stories about your company, but you have to be able to engage directly and meaningfully in those different exchanges in ways that are appropriate for them. You can telegraph certain amounts of it, but ultimately it's going to be a combination of those big picture choices you make to create a story and how that voice trickles down into the smaller platforms and the ways that you engage the audience directly. If they're discordant, you're going to be telling a different story than the one you thought you wanted to tell.
Right. So now going back and mm-hmm. talking and thinking around VR, do you view VR as a different platform, just like these other platforms? Or does VR transform everything and everything is now different, or is it just simply another communication platform?
platforms and stories and brand environments, because I've worked in advertising and I've worked directly with brands and companies as a consultant, is that the thing that is in common about every single story you're going to tell is that there's a human on the other end. The human at the center, like the person you're talking to and the person that's speaking, are the things that are always going to be in common. So when we're looking at developing new content for new technologies, the thing that we have to come back to is the fact that there's a human at the center of it. And for virtual reality, the human is literally at the center of the experience. You know, you are putting them into something that will surround them. And this is another tool in our toolkit to communicate with one another. So as a brand or as a storyteller, as a showrunner, think about why you would be using this tool. You know, I see a lot of really, really strong early potential for music videos. I see a lot of strong potential for space. How can you use space? How can you take your audience into one of those spaces as new things that are being opened up by this new technology? And at the same time, VR is letting us play with new technologies like interior scanning and depth scanning, photogrammetry, being able to bring in different sorts of interactivity into a world where you can feel it with haptic controllers, or where you're going to be able to use voice or eye movement or gestures to control those interactions. But one of the things that we're seeing a lot of right now, and I think we will for the next year or so, is there's going to be a lot of VR content that has been commissioned without a strong sense of why. Because VR is new and exciting and people have their eye on it and it's eye-catching. There's nothing wrong with doing something because it's new and because it's eye-catching. But if you want it to last, if you want it to be something that people come back to, it's because it will have that deeper perspective. It'll have a different reason for being. It's sort of when interactive video came out, for the first times, it was really, a lot of people played with it, but when you were watching it, you didn't quite know why the interactivity was there. It was a video and there was a layer of choice on top of it. The opposite thing can be true, where you're playing with something very, very fun and interesting as a technology, but you can put it down and walk away afterwards because there was nothing moving on a human level emotionally about what you just did. It wasn't grabbing you in that deeper way. We can all, as humans, tell each other stories and engage with a story that's presented to us. And when we think, and so that human-centered design comes first. When I'm engaging with a client, when I'm engaging with a story world, I first have to go into that kind of platform neutral space where, what are the things that you're trying to communicate? What are your goals? Who are you? Those things that drive people to you, that really are consistent no matter what story you're telling or how you're telling it. VR as a platform, and it's not just one platform. We have, you know, at least a dozen that I can count that are growing out of this concept of immersive, present, complete immersion virtual reality formats. And that's not just the head-mounted display platforms versus web VR. That's 180-degree video, 360-degree video. You know, we have a lot more tools than just one when we talk about VR. And the purpose of them is going to differ too. You know, why you choose a 360 video versus a standard video. What's going to be more compelling about having it in 360 degrees than having it in a autoplay? It's sort of, these questions are ones that we're exploring right now. Right. And when we sit down together, or I'm sitting down with a client, you know, when we're collaborating, people are really good at solving those problems. We're built to be able to solve problems together creatively. So I can come in with a bunch of toolkits of tools that we can use to solve a problem. Like, how do we communicate this idea to a million people? Or how do we tell this story in the most moving way possible? But that's kind of where you need to start if you want to make something that hits deep. Whether your goal is to sell something or to move someone or to inspire them, sort of what is it that you want first? Why do you want it? And then what are the best tools to get you there?
Fascinating. I want to take a bit of a dogleg turn here, because I can't not ask you about this, because Pokemon Go is like the convergence of all of your expertise. You know, you've got immersive storytelling, interactive storytelling, disruptive technology, augmented reality. I mean, it's
massive,
like,
intellectual property franchises, you know, all of this.
It's like your sweet spot. Yeah. So what do you think?
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on Pokemon Go. it's the culmination of 20 years of work that has come before in alternate reality games and location-based games. And while it has an AR component, you know, it's very much a location-based game. Creatively, you know, it's even a fairly simple one. You're not dealing with a lot of puzzles. It's not particularly difficult game mechanics. And, you know, that's great because it means everyone from a 6-year-old to a 60-year-old is going to be able to understand how to play it immediately. You know, in terms of putting my commercial hat on, it's the first time we've had a location-based game with mass market reach like this. It's the first time it's been genuinely ubiquitous. Not only is the technology in people's hands, but the size of the app itself is manageable enough, and the back end is manageable enough because it's built on Google Maps. It's all come together at a time where finally all of the technology can play with itself, can play with one another to a point we can really do this thing we've all been working towards for a really long time.
What's up next? What do you think the next big thing on the horizon? What are you like? What's the thing everybody should be paying attention to next?
Man, I used to say holodecks, but now we have the Vive. I think the thing I'm most excited about in the next few years is actually going back to physical theater. And groups like Barbecue Films and Little Cinema here in New York that are sort of playing with the conventions of movie screenings are great early call-outs for this. People who are creating live events that are bringing in technology and are bringing in other tools and are acting in a convergent way. So we talk about VR and AR as very technical types of convergence, but physical space theater, where this convergence is happening, is a thing that's going to be happening at the same time, and they're going to be influencing one another in really exciting ways. So as we're looking at how these convergent technologies take us into these individualized worlds, we're also going to be seeing really cool new ideas of how they can bring people together into a social space that is an event that is genuinely social.
Real social.
That sort of transcendent experience you can only get with other people when you're engaging in something that is a phenomena that won't ever happen again. Like a play, even though it's the same play every night, it never happens the same way twice because there are too many people involved. It's always going to be slightly, slightly different. And those experiences are the ones that, you know, they make humans incredibly happy. They make audiences go to the moon. So Sleep No More, Accomplice, Then She Fell, things like that are already sparking movements in this immersive theater space. And on the other side, licensing and repertory from studios for things like Barbecue Films, where they just did this great screening of Ghostbusters, we're going to see new ways for people to be bringing people together for genuinely fun and exciting, very creative new ways in physical space.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it. It's been really great fun. Well, we've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've been indispensable to bringing this program to life. First and foremost, I want to thank Caitlin Burns for a great interview. Also, a big thank you to our past guest and new friend, Blaine Graybois, for introducing us to Caitlin. Thank you to the wonderful voice artist, my friend Rob Naughton, our production team over at Microfame Media, thank you. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.